Hello and welcome to Inside Education. We're online at insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on this week's programme.
Achievement on different sorts of tests is not just a consequence of what happens in schools. It's not just a consequence of the investments that governments put in education. It's just not about teacher training. It's a whole society thing.
A keynote speaker at this week's Mathematics Education Conference in St Patrick's College, Drumcondra, tells us why raising mathematics achievement needs to be a culture-wide endeavour. But first, as always, we go to Barry Hennessy for this week's education news. You're welcome, Barry.
Hello again, Sean. The Irish Universities Association this week said that reform of the point system for third level entry was essential, but that any new system put in place would not be perfect. The association was publishing its own suggestions for reform of higher education selection in time for a conference at UCD that brought together a range of interested parties and was addressed by the Minister for Education and Skills, Rory Quinn. One of the ideas from the universities is the establishing of a basic entry requirement for a reduced number of first-year foundation-type courses in a reduced number of disciplines. Another suggestion, which also featured in Professor Anya Hyland's report that we discussed a couple of weeks ago, is that a quota of places will be put aside for the top Leaving Cert performers in each school as a way of combating educational disadvantage. For his part, the Minister for Education told the UCD conference that the need to equip students with key skills required in the modern workplace, such as critical thinking, independent learning and teamwork, was being hampered as students moved through senior cycle at post-primary. Minister Quinn referred to research published by Dr. Sean McDonough, the former director of the Dundalk Institute of Technology, that shows a marked tendency among senior cycle students to choose subjects that are perceived to be easy. Geography and biology were cases in point, the minister said, as was agricultural science, where the number of students presenting at higher level Leaving Cert has increased by 42% since 2008. Minister Quinn reminded his audience of the evidence that second level performance is the best predictor of third level performance, but went on to add that we must ask ourselves if the current examinations are adequately measuring and rewarding the capacities that we want students to develop. Minister Quinn himself acknowledged that he came before the conference with more questions than answers, and indeed anybody listening to his speech might come away similarly devoid of clarity. Are we discussing selection for higher education or problems with the senior cycle curriculum and its assessment? If the Leaving Cert isn't measuring skills or knowledge useful in higher education or the world of work, surely the problem is the Leaving Cert and not the point system. And where in this debate is the voice of the students? We tried to contact the Irish Secondary Students Union this week to invite them to give their views on this programme. So far they haven't returned our call, which is a real pity, since any reforms introduced must first and foremost win the trust of the pupils whose future will be decided by the changes. The newly appointed Provost of Trinity College Dublin, Dr. Paddy Prendergast, has delivered a sobering assessment of the challenges facing his university and the university sector in general as he delivered his inaugural address this week. Dr. Prendergast pointed out that Trinity has fallen 22 places in the global university rankings in just 2 years, from 43rd to 65th. The key issue in maintaining and raising standards, Dr. Prendergast argued, is funding. And if that funding continues to fall and the best students cannot get the best education in Ireland, they will go abroad for it. Dr. Prendergast criticised the manner in which the possible reintroduction of third level fees here is reduced to what he called simplistic headlines. Rather, the issue is, he said, one for the utmost consideration. The Provost said that Trinity is currently working on a proposal about how private contributions can be increased. The college is looking at countries such as China and Australia, where such models exist, and will in time be sending proposals to the Higher Education Authority. Dr. Prendergast also warned of the dangers of excessive regulation in the post-Celtic Tiger climate. Trinity College, he argued, didn't lose the run of itself during the boom. Dr. Prendergast said he had no problem with regulation that ensures accountability, but he railed against the type of regulation that threatens to emasculate decision-making, arguing that in the case of universities, regulation was desirable in terms of outputs, leaving institutions free to deploy resources to best effect for the education of their own students. Right now, the Provost argued, universities are being forced to shed jobs rather than create them. It doesn't make sense, Dr. Prendergast said. Why aren't we turning Ireland into an educational hub? Students who are unsuccessful in applying for third level grants are to have access to a formal appeals process for the first time. A new Student Grants Appeals Board, chaired by Maureen Waldron, former Secretary General of the Department of Social Protection, has been put in place under the terms of the Student Support Act 2011. Regular listeners will recall that the City of Dublin VEC has won the tender to be the new single grant awarding authority, with the changeover to a fully online system being phased in from 2012. And finally, applications are now being accepted for next year's Fulbright grants for postgraduate, postdoctoral and professional studies in the United States. Awards can be made for students in all disciplines, and the deadline for applications is Friday, the 18th of November. The average grant on offer for postgraduate students in the US is $18,500, and there are special awards for scholars or teachers of Irish. You can get more information on Fulbright.org. IE. And that's this week's Education News, Sean.
Thanks for that, Barry. And Barry Hennessy will, of course, be back at the same time next week. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. You can contact the programme by text message on 086 8962 665. In trying to raise Irish children's performance in maths, policymakers have been looking at how other countries achieve the levels that they do on international comparative tests such as PISA. One European country that does well in both reading and mathematics on PISA is Finland, and many Irish people have been trying to better understand Finnish education in order to emulate their success. But Dr. Paul Andrews from the University of Cambridge believes that Finland might not be such a good role model for improving mathematics teaching. He shared his views with participants at the Conference on Mathematics Education in Ireland, which is held biennially in St. Patrick's College, Drumcondra. I attended the conference and recorded interviews with Paul Andrews and others. I shall bring you more of the other interviews in a future Inside Education programmes. But Paul Andrews is an expert on the cultural aspect of mathematics teaching and learning. The cultural dimension of mathematics education becomes important once we start to look beyond Ireland in order to learn from other countries. I began my interview with Paul Andrews by asking him, what can we in Ireland learn from Finland about mathematics teaching?
In terms of mathematical didactics, you can learn not a lot. Finnish success on international tests like PISA, I think, is far more a cultural phenomenon than it is to do with the management of learning classrooms. Research that's been undertaken over the last 50, 60 years has shown that Finnish mathematics teaching is highly procedural, highly teacher-centred, limited problem-solving opportunities, and with very, very little student engagement in an explicit sense. They may well be engaged cognitively, but there's no obvious engagement on the part of the kids. They sit there passively, lesson after lesson after lesson. If a teacher asks a question, it's likely to be requiring a single one-word answer. If a child gets an answer wrong, the evidence of the lessons that we've seen is the teacher will just acknowledge it with a yes and then move to somebody else, leaving the first student to infer for him or herself, why was that answer wrong? What have I done that's incorrect? Or even if it was correct, why was it correct? Teachers never seek clarification. Teachers never seem to offer any clarification. The lessons seem to progress at a slow pace. Kids make lots of notes. They make copious notes. But teachers never seem to do anything in an explicit manner. They leave stuff for kids to infer.
But they're getting the results.
Yeah, they're getting the results. Now, I think part of that is, when the kids, the limited evidence I've got in this respect is that kids go home and they discuss what they've done with their parents. And the learning is probably a reflective learning that takes place after the lessons are completed. But it's not, I'm seeing nothing in the classrooms to suggest that what the teachers do explicitly is facilitating learning. Now, what we do know about Finns is that they are a highly competent nation when it comes to reading, and there's all sorts of cultural reasons for that. First of all, if you look at Finnish cultural traditions, I think they're a sort of Calvinist nation. So, if you like, it's on the right wing of the church. But a key aspect of this is you don't need a priest to mediate. You can mediate to God directly yourself if you have access to the scriptures. So in Finnish culture, you have to be able to read in order to access the scriptures, in order to mediate your intercession with God. That's the historical take on this that goes back to late medieval times. Now, the consequence of that was Teenagers would have been assessed for their reading competence in a public examination called the Kinkeret. And if you failed the Kinkeret, you were forbidden to take any of the sacraments. Now, a key sacrament in all Christian churches is marriage. So, of course, in Finland, if you can't read, you can't marry. And the consequence of this inevitably is you don't have an illiterate underclass. The expectation is that everybody will read because you cannot partake of Finnish culture if you can't. The next thing to overlay onto that is you look at Finland in terms of its geography and its location in the globe. From the end of October to the beginning of March, it's effectively dark. Not only is it dark, but it's incredibly cold, and the Finns historically have been a rural community, relatively small, sparsely populated, spread all over the place. So for those 4 months of winter, what have you got to do beyond reading? So reading is an incredibly important part of Finnish culture, as is Finnish literature, is Finnish poetry, Finnish singing, music making, all part of that same tradition. So Finns are competent in reading. Their success in mathematics, I think, is a consequence of that, but also a consequence of the fact that the whole community has high expectations and they participate collectively in children's learning.
But could it be that we've got it wrong in terms of wanting children to think mathematically and wanting them to engage with the thinking and so on? Like, could there be a benefit? And do they obviously are learning some maths in this didactic way.
They're learning the mathematics appropriate to success on PISA tests. Whether you regard the PISA assessment framework as an appropriate thing to be following, that's another question. Academic Finns, academic mathematician Finns, are deeply concerned that the kids coming through schools are not learning the algebraic competences, they're not learning about geometry, they're not learning deductive reasoning, the skills of proof. So they're being ill-prepared for academic mathematics. The Finnish kids seem to be adequately prepared through a combination of the curriculum model as it is and the societal sort of expectations. They're prepared for success on PISA. Now, successive Finnish governments have tried to incorporate problem solving, for example, within the Finnish curriculum. But all the classroom-based research that's been taking place in the last 25 years is still showing that teachers are behaving exactly as they were 50 years ago. There is effectively no problem solving in Finnish schools. When you do see a teacher introduce a non-routine problem, the teacher solves it. The kids don't. The kids get very few opportunities to engage in something that would challenge themselves personally, independently of what the teacher's already done.
So in some ways what you're saying then is quite an indictment of the whole PISA method of testing children, this international test that we've paid so much attention to over the last year, at least in Ireland.
Well, you must be familiar with the report that Sean Close and Elizabeth Oldham and others put together, I think in 2006-2007, that compared the Irish curriculum with the PISA assessment framework. And I think this is a really interesting thing. PISA is a perspective on learning and a perspective on the outcomes of teaching. Ireland, like all countries, has its own cultural norms, expectations with regard to what it expects children to achieve in school. And those are reflected in the curriculum that the Irish governments or successive governments have constructed, and those are reflected in the means of assessment and so on. Now, when Sean Close and his colleagues made these comparisons, roughly speaking, between 40 and 50% of the PISA assessment items, or the context in which the problems were posed, or the manner of the items, were alien to Irish kids. They weren't reflective of the Irish curriculum and the Irish teaching tradition. So it's not a surprise to me if Irish kids appear to be performing poorly, because you're not assessing them on what it is they do in school. So PISA is fundamentally flawed in its failure to acknowledge that different systems, different curricula, different assessment expectations vary enormously from one country to another. Now, what is interesting, I guess, is, and this is slightly speculative, after the first PISA in 2000, the German reaction was fierce. The hands were thrown up in horror. German education is in desperate states. We must do something. My suspicion is if the Germans had not made such a song and dance about PISA, PISA would never have taken hold in the way that it has. If a small, insignificant nation had made the same sort of reaction, Who would have cared? But the fact it was the Germans, a major economic power in the global economy, who were concerned about their response to PISA, I think gave PISA a credibility that it doesn't necessarily deserve.
So I'm taking your answer, your perspective that that because the Irish curriculum is out of sync with PISA, that could explain why Irish students perform badly. But it's not just that we performed badly, but it's that we performed worse than we did the first time round.
That's something I can't comment on. That I don't know why there's been that decline, because of course on the first three pieces the Irish score was plateaued, 503, 502, 501, those sorts of things,
and then it dropped
down to 487 or something, which is disconcerting, yes, but it's not as bad as the English. The English in 2000 started off at a princely 529 and we're in the top rank. And it's been in terminal decline ever since, so that we're now down to the level that you are, but we started at a much higher one. Now, I don't know why that's happened either, but actually I'm not worried by that. I would be much more worried if our scores on TIMSS had done that, because for me TIMSS is the better assessment of mathematical competence.
And we haven't been part of that for a while.
Not since the first one. And in the first one, you scored very highly. The Irish performance on TIMSS in 1995, which I think was 529, put you in the top rank of European nations. And then for whatever reasons, the Irish never went back to TIMSS, you stuck with PISA. But PISA is only a test of kids' applicable knowledge. It's not a test of their technical competence. It's a test of their ability to apply commonsensical understandings to, inverted commas, real-world problems.
I know, Paul, that one of your main interests of research is of the cultural aspect of mathematical knowledge. And can you say a little bit about that in the context of how different countries perform on different tests, whether it's TIMSS or whether it's PISA, and what, you know, what how do we judge the effect of culture on student performance?
The problem with culture is it's a very difficult beast to define. Culture is represented in the way in which the curriculum is structured. It's represented in the outcomes of the educational process. It's reflected in the objectives or the aims that underpin the curriculum. Why do we send children to school? What are our objectives as a system for sending children to school? Do we expect to educate children because broadening the mind is a worthwhile objective, or do we send children to school because we think preparing them for the world of work is the most important thing? Now, those two are not necessarily incompatible, but they're not easily reconciled. And some systems are quite clear. The focus of learning is on the broadening of the mind, learning as an intellectual discipline.
Such as what countries would be like that?
The French particularly, the Hungarians. Mathematics in Hungary is rarely taught from any perspective linked to the real world. It's taught as an intellectually robust, rigorous, independent body of knowledge with a set of defining characteristics, ways of working that justify mathematical thinking and reasoning proof that separate mathematics from all forms of knowledge. It's a cultural artefact. To be Hungarian is to understand mathematics, and no Hungarian would ever make any claims to being educated who had failed at mathematics. You would not find, it just would not be acceptable for a person to make claims to being educated and not being successful in mathematics.
Which does happen in the Irish culture anyway.
It happens in the Irish culture. It happens in the English-speaking world. The UK, the Irish, the North Americans, the Antipodeans, they're all the same. You can make claims to being educated without having succeeded in mathematics. Now, in most European countries, that's not how it is. Kids do learn mathematics, but they learn it in different ways because of these different sort of, I guess, objectives. The Flemish, for example, which I think are particularly interesting, because if you look at the TIMSS scores from 1995 to 2003, so Flanders did three TIMSS, they were the highest scoring European nation on TIMSS. So Flemish kids are technically competent. They understand mathematics and they can perform routine mathematical calculations. They can solve equations. They can angle chase and show that the angle of whatever is that. They understand mathematical concepts better than most Europeans. Significantly, when you separate the Flemish data on PISA from the from the French-speaking community of Belgium, because they're reported as one on PISA, you also find that Flanders is as successful, if not more successful, on PISA as Finland. So Flanders gets it right on both sorts of tests. They create kids who can apply their knowledge, but they also have kids who are technically very competent. Now, my analysis of the Flemish situation is the teaching in Flanders is much more interactive than in Finland. It's a mixture of two traditions. It started with the modern maths movement of the 1960s and 70s, based on highly structured approaches to content knowledge, the Bourbakian school. But then it's been mediated by a strong influence of the Dutch realistic mathematics education movement. And you put these two together, and I don't know how you're going to explain this to your listeners, but I'll leave that one to you.
Okay, so let me try. Bourbaki was a name given to a team of young international mathematicians from the 1930s onwards who believed in rigour and who based a lot of their work on set theory. Realistic mathematics education was developed in the Netherlands by Freudenthal and others. It is based on the idea that mathematics must be connected to reality, stay close to children and be relevant to society in order to be of human value.
When you put those two together, you create some incredibly powerful learning contexts. And I think that's part of the success of Flanders. But you still cannot avoid, when you do all of these analyses, looking at the culture as a whole. To what extent is the culture essentially egalitarian? The Finns have invested billions into creating an equal society. The gap between the richest and the poorest is small. The healthcare for all is good and free. And all those characteristics create an equitable community. And what we do know from other sorts of research in international perspectives is that the more egalitarian a community, the more likely you are to have not only higher levels of achievement, but no tail, because the society doesn't allow for that. So you have a narrow achievement gap as well. And so countries like the United Kingdom, countries like the United States, to an extent countries like Ireland, where you have quite large social gaps, you inevitably have large gaps in achievement.
So it really comes back to the priorities of a country and what they want to achieve for their citizens, whether it's in terms of, I mean, do you want to have say these high flyers, and do you want to have this long tail that you talk about, or do you want to have a narrow gap but maybe you're not have as many high flyers? Is that the kind of choice that a country has to make?
Almost. Very few countries have managed to eliminate the tail but sustain the elite at the top. And I think that is a cultural decision. And it's, and all I can say is that the evidence tells us quite clearly, the greater the gap you have between the richest and the poorest, or against all sorts of measures, the bigger the spread of achievement. And that means, for example, that the UK, the United States, we retain a very small elite in terms of mathematical achievement. And that is shown in maths departments at Cambridge and Oxford and those sorts of places, and similarly in the States. There's a small number of very highly achieving mathematicians. But there's a huge tail, and that at the moment the research says we can't reconcile those two, but we can have a relatively high achieving society with no tail at the sacrifice perhaps at the top end.
And finally, Paul, if you were hired as a consultant by the Minister for Education and Skills here in Dublin, who said, look, I want to my mark on this system is going to be improved mathematical achievement among our learners, would you say to him, forget about that PISA test and don't worry about it, just keep doing what you're doing? Or would you say, look, it's cultural and you're not going to be able to solve it? Or what would you say to him?
I think there's nothing wrong in looking at countries that have been identified by various ways as achieving in certain areas. But to say PISA is the definitive yardstick or the definitive benchmark, I think is flawed. We need others, and TIMSS is another one of those. But we also have to understand that achievement on different sorts of tests is not just a consequence of what happens in schools. It's not just a consequence of the investments that governments put in education. It's just not about teacher training. It's a whole society thing. It's more than just that. I would certainly say to any minister, don't go and look at the Pacific Rim, because there's no way you can compare an Irish culture with a Japanese culture. If we're going to find ways of improving what we do in our respective communities, we have to look at communities that are culturally similar to us to see what it is that they're doing that's different, that makes them more successful than us. That's why I think the answers may well lie in Flanders, but they won't be found in Malaysia or Singapore or Japan or Korea.
And presumably it's not going to be a quick fix either.
No, these things never are quick fixes. We're talking about, if you get the systemic investment correct, we're talking about, I think, a 10, 20-year project.
So I hope that Minister Quinn keeps that in mind as he thinks about reforms to our maths system and our maths teaching. That was Dr. Paul Andrews from the University of Cambridge. He was in Ireland to deliver a keynote address at MEI4 at St. Patrick's College in Drumcondra. Barry and I, we're looking at some changes to the programme at the moment, and if you have any suggestions or any ideas for things you'd like covered on the programme or any new components that we could introduce to the programme, we'd be delighted to hear from you. You can write to us by email at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie, or you can write to us by text message on 086 8962 665. Well, that's about all we have for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. I want to thank my guests, Paul Andrews and Barry Hennessy, for the education news. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.